presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of
Comic Dorks!
Many lives would have been lost if Captain America hadn't appeared.
Thrilling adventure and tense excitement, pounding action and spine-tingling mystery.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Comic Dorks. It is your monthly dose of comic bookery from the Comic Dorks crew. I meant to put an S on the end of that. It's May 27th. That means it's the very end of May. That means that's your episode for the month of May 2019. I'm Scott Johnson with, of course, the man full of mystery, yet not all that mysterious, Stephen Schleicher. Hello.
Hello. How are you, Scott?
I'm good, man. It's good to be back. It's been a month and lots of stuff has happened. You know, it's interesting seeing this show from a month-to-month perspective. It does have a way of, like, reminding you how much of the news cycle can happen in three weeks, 4 weeks, or whatever.
Oh, definitely, because I'm sitting here going, my gosh, what has happened in the last month? What are the big things?
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff always happens right around the time we're recording a show, so I guess that kind of works out.
Yeah, and we can, you know, there's a couple of movie things that we don't have to get into in particular, but, you know, it was announced in the last 30 days that they are looking at Robert Pattinson, or have hired him to be the next Batman, which
that's
has
true.
Caused quite a bit of a stir. There's a lot of little things like that going on out there, and we've had the release and aftermath, and therefore great success of Endgame, basically has happened in the last 30 days. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
So yeah, it's kind of weird to look at it from that perspective, but we've got all kinds of fun stuff for you today. In this lineup for Comic Dorks, so stick with us.
Deep in the heart of the city, a clandestine meeting is held by the members of the deadly enemy, the Secret Empire.
The Secret Empire, that's right. Time for the news. Let's talk about Tom King officially off of Batman. We don't want to talk about who's on Batman. Let's talk about who's off Batman.
Right. Well, the reason why this is a big deal is for the last, I want to say, week and a half prior to this episode, there have been all these rumors flying around over this tweet that Tom King had sent out, and his artist on Batman sent out, basically saying, hey, I want to thank everyone who was involved in making Batman happen. This has been a great run. Tom King was on a run to have written 100 issues of Batman. Mm-hmm. He had even tweeted out, I want to say last month, a month or two ago, that he had plans to take this all the way to 100, which would have been 15 episodes from issue 75. And people were very excited about his plans. I mean, he's the one that brought us the Batman and Catwoman marriage that didn't happen, and a lot of things that are going on with Batman, including this City of Bane kind of storyline that's been going on for the last year. And then suddenly in the last week, there's these rumors that, oh no, he's not going to be able to complete his run. Why isn't he going to be able to complete his run? What has DC done?
Is there some controversy? Is it like a big deal? Something went bad, sour?
Well, he was behind the I forget what the name of the series is, where essentially there is a certain superhero who killed a bunch of other B-list heroes, and it really kind of explored some PTSD, and a lot of people were very upset with what he had done with that. And so there may have been, from the larger community of comic book fans, some tarnishing of the Tom King image. And he'd even tweeted out, like I said, a month or so ago, that he had to go to Warner Brothers and DC, the head honchos at both of those companies, to say, here's what I want to do with Batman. Mm-hmm. And both of the, you know, having to go all the way up to the parent company, Warner Brothers, to say, hey, I want to completely change what's going on with Batman. Mm-hmm. And to have them write that off was kind of a big deal. And so I'm wondering if there wasn't a sudden moment of clarity or something in the middle of the night where someone sat up and go, oh no, we can't let him do that. And so the official word is that he's off Batman. Mm-hmm. Because mainly DC, according to their press release, says that they want to bring the Batman title into the main DC continuity with some of the other events that are going on. I'll talk about one of them here later in the show, but instead they're moving Tom King and Clay Mann off to Batman Catwoman series that he will run for essentially 12 issues, which would have taken him up to his 100 issue run. Mm. So they're just kind of moving him off to another title, which will run concurrently with the Batman series, which will be brought into the main DC universe and its continuity.
My main memory of Tom King is his work on The Vision for Marvel. Mm-hmm. And I remember that being like really good and kind of a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
So yeah. My, well, my, you get it? Yeah, go ahead.
If you get a chance, you should read his Miracle Man series, which was really, really good, but also a bit controversial with what he was doing there. And some of his other stuff at DC has been really good, but the Heroes in Crisis is the one that really got a lot of people angry at what he was doing. So,
So do you think that's so what we're probably seeing, and we're not going to hear about it too much internally because they never talk about these things internally, but just too much fan freak out, and DC has had to sort of quietly bring Tom King in a room and say, yeah, probably ought to not be on this title anymore.
Maybe. I mean, that would be the, I guess the good read of it. Although I'm sure there's a lot of other stuff going on in the background. Like I said, someone at WB suddenly saying, oh wait, we can't do that to Batman because we've got this new Batman movie coming up. So that could have been part of it too, but yeah, there's been a lot of fan controversy and lashback or lashing out at Tom King that maybe DC finally said, maybe we should do something.
Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff I'm reading says he's getting death threats from Wally West fans without getting into spoilers.
Well, and again, that goes into the whole Heroes in Crisis series that has gotten everyone all up in arms. And so there was a moment, this last summer, I think at the San Diego Comic-Con, they actually had to provide him security to follow him around the show because there were these death threats on him.
Dang.
Which is odd, too, because, you know, he laughed it up, and apparently he knew this guy that was his bodyguard the entire weekend, and they had a lot of fun and laughed it up a lot. But it did also spark a lot of questioning from the internet about, well, there's all of these trans creators and all these female creators who are getting death threats all the time. Why does Tom King get this special treatment and they don't also get that kind of protective treatment? So, yeah, he's a pretty hot figure, but he's also done some very interesting storytelling. I can't tell you that it's all been good, but it is very different, and it is interesting in the way that he's presenting those stories.
Freaks me out that we live in a time where a comic book writer has bodyguard security because he's getting death threats. That's just insane to me. You know,
now, there's another story coming up that it may have been a good idea to have somebody that was a little bit more careful around a comic creator, but we'll talk about
that.
That's
a good point. Yep. Some people may already have a feel a bit of a hint coming. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about Marvel Comics number 1000.
So Action Comics and Detective Comics both hit issue 1000 in the last couple of months. And those are big milestones. There aren't very many comics that have been around that long.
Yeah.
Well, Marvel Comics actually launched under Atlas Comics with a series called Marvel Comics back in 1939. I'm going to ask you, Scott, do you know who those which Marvel characters were in the very first Marvel Comics comic book?
I don't. Okay, so I'm going to make a guess. I do think it's kind of confusingly hilarious that it was Atlas Comics at the launch of something called Marvel Comics, which became Marvel Comics, and the Atlas Comics went away. And
yeah.
Plus, we had that discussion either on TMS or the show about Atlas making a comeback. Yeah. Anyway, all right, I'm going to take a guess here. This give me the year, and that's
the only. This is 1939, so this would be a year after Superman, and the same year that Batman appeared on the scene.
Okay. For Marvel, I'm going to say, this is such a guess. It's ridiculously dumb, this guess, but I'm going to say it's the one where Captain America punches Hitler.
No, it's not. So this very first issue, this is even before, I mean, this is pre-World War II, just before World War II, or at least when the United States entered World War II. Yeah. But this is the very first time that we had the Human Torch, who is not the Johnny Storm that we know when Marvel kind of rebooted and formed the Fantastic Four, but it is a man who is on fire, actually a robot that's on fire.
Oh.
The Angel, Submariner, and the Masked Raider were the four characters introduced in Marvel Comics in 1939.
Was the Submariner was there to just sort of neutralize the Flaming Man so you could never get too wet or too on fire, that kind of thing?
They were essentially antagonists with one another as their stories progressed. But yeah, Submariner was the villain from the very beginning. At one point in during the World War, I think it was World War II, he actually flooded New York at one point.
Wow.
Until he decided to say to heck with the Nazis and teamed up with Captain America and started fighting on the side of right and justice and kind of became this anti-hero that we know today.
Yeah, I kind of like where he ended up, but interesting. I would have had no idea. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, and so as we look at this solicitation for, I mean, they've got like a million creators, almost 1,000. It's not really 1,000, but the way this issue is going to be done is Jason Aaron is the main storyteller. And then they have a list of artists as long as your arm. There's not quite 1,000 artists, but however long this thing is, every artist is going to get a page to tell in this story about how what's going on now in the Marvel Universe has its origins all the way back in 1939. And why is there a conspiracy to keep the true history of the Marvel Universe hidden? And so I think a lot of people are going to be geared up for that. This really isn't issue 1000. I'm sure in a weird numbering system that Marvel does, it kind of maybe equals 1000. But I think that there's some pressure from Marvel to say, oh, yeah, well, I know DC's got their 1000 comics and we've just released another Iron Man number one. But we've also got a Marvel Comics 1000 coming up. So, just kind of keep that in mind, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to double check. But I'm pretty sure that Marvel Comics evolved into Astonishing Tales for some reason.
OK.
And that's where we see a lot more of the current continuity start to appear.
Well, what's surprising,
so there's some weird numbering going on.
What's surprising to me is that there's 1000 of anything of this medium. Like, that's just crazy. Mm-hmm. That's a crazy number. Yeah. Like, it's not only is it, huge and celebration worthy and all of that, but it's kind of mind-boggling how much art that is, how much writing that is. Like, across the board, that's just insanity. I mean, where's DC in this regard? Is DC anywhere near this?
Well, like I said, Action Comics with Superman hit 1,000 issues, I want to say in April. Mm. And then Detective Comics just hit 1,000 issues in March, I want to say.
Okay. All right.
Or so, no, Superman did it last year. Batman did it this year. Yeah, because they're a year apart. So.
All right. Well, DC showing once again, they know what's up as well.
Oh, I'm correction before everybody writes in. It wasn't Astonishing Tales. It was Amazing Adventures. The book was Marvel Comics, and then it evolved into Amazing Adventures.
So I assume that we're going to get showcased a bunch of artists. Like, we're going to see George Perez.
Oh,
we're going to see David Mandel.
No, so if you look at the long list, I mean, now I'm sure this is not, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is actually going to write a part of this big issue.
Whoa.
And if you didn't know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is actually a really good writer. He has done some very cool Sherlock Holmes' older brother, Mycroft Holmes, stories that are very neat.
I did not know that at all. That's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah. So you're going to get Kurt Busiek is in there writing some stuff. John Cassaday is in there. Mike Diodato, Jerry Duggan, Al Ewing, Neil Gaiman is going to contribute to this. Karen Gillan, Jonathan Hickman, Joe Hill, J.J. Kirby, which I believe is Jack's nephew. If you haven't followed the Jack Kirby Instagram or Twitter feed, you really should.
Okay.
Jeff Loeb is in there. Adam Ritchie, Javier Rodriguez. I mean, the list literally goes on and on and on and on. There are so many creators involved.
McFarlane doing anything? Going to come back?
I don't see his name in here. I see Ed McGuinness, Steve McNiven in there. Brad Metzler is in there, or Meltzer is in there. I don't see McFarlane in there in the M section.
I wonder if they're still mad at him. Just for,
I don't think so. I think they're kind of okay with Todd McFarlane.
I think so. The guy changed the world.
They're happy bringing back, what's his name? Deadpool creator.
That guy. Rob Liefeld. Yeah.
Rob Liefeld. He's doing stuff with Marvel again. So.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're still very happy. I mean, there is a Todd McFarlane Spider-Man statue that is coming out, I want to say, from Sideshow Collectibles.
Ooh.
That is based on that one cover that he did where Spider-Man is jumping in that, where his legs are all in, this weird position that you don't think that a human body could form to, with the spider webbing all over the place. So they've got a statue coming out on that. So McFarlane is, I think there may be some animosity of pulling all of their greatest creators to go form Image.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think they also have to respect him as well.
He's,
he's really busy with the Spawn movie that's coming up. As well as Spawn 300, which is coming up, and he and Greg Capullo are teaming for the Spawn 300 issue.
Oh,
so I'm sure you're going to be super excited about that, Scott.
Yeah, I did not know that. Capullo is one of my favorite artists. I thought he was so busy with Batman things.
That's coming up in 3 months. Let's see, 297 just arrived. Mm. So depending on the release schedule, I believe in the next 2 months, we will see issue 300 of Spawn arrive.
That's awesome. That's a hell of a run, 92 to now. Think mm-hmm. about it. That's really great. Well, speaking of that McFarlane statue, I assume that you mentioned the webbing's kind of all over the place, but does it have that kind of crazy split off?
I'm going to have to look up really quick, what that,
cause if they don't, they're dumb. Like. They have to do that cause it's iconic. He changed the webbing forever.
Let me show you, this is from ArtStation. I'm going to just drop it here into our chat channel so you can see this. But yeah, there's some kind of webbing all around him, like pumpkin bombs flying around, and It's very interesting.
Yeah, that's the stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so.
And it's all translucent, and it's nice.
Yeah, and the way the webbing on his arms and boots, mm-hmm. the way it's kind of weird and shiny and kind of sticks out was a total McFarlane thing.
Yep.
The ropey nature of the.
Yeah, that was one of the big things with McFarlane with Spider-Man is he really changed the nature of the webs and the web shooters.
Yeah, and it's like that now for like everyone does it. They all kind of copied it.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes me very happy to hear all of that.
Yeah.
I would put this in a room. Oh, and they got the giant, huge spider eyes. Like, look how big those are. Oh, that's McFarlane as hell.
It looks neat. It looks really neat.
Very, very cool. Well, all right. Happy birthday or whatever you'd call it, Marvel Comics. Happy 1000.
Anniversary. Yes. Happy 1000 issues. That's coming out in August of 2019.
Now, we hinted earlier about maybe having, I don't know, better protections for our creators.
Yeah.
Stan Lee's manager has now been charged with elder abuse. Now, there were charges of this while Stan Lee was still around.
Yes.
And I don't remember if it was coming from him directly or somebody, but
no, it wasn't from him. But there were people on the inside. And the reason why a lot of the allegations were kind of thrown away is because I believe they were coming from his daughter. And again, these are all rumors and speculations that there was maybe some not good relationship between Stan and his daughter, especially in the areas of money. And so, you know, Stan Lee's manager was being very careful of who was able to access Stan Lee at these times. But then right around this time that Stan Lee started getting sick, this was all happened after his wife passed away.
Yeah.
There was these allegations that, you know, his manager was doing elder abuse to him and under investigation for writing checks and buying condos and all these other things that were going on. At one point, Kevin Smith said, hey, if this is really going on, Stan can come and live in my house completely for free. And we would love to take care of him. Mm-hmm. Now this guy is under investigation specifically for this, a lot of money laundering and other stuff.
And is he, like when they say elder abuse, like what is he smacking him or is he just using his money? What does that even mean? What's the definition in this particular case? Do we know?
So the charges include theft, embezzlement, forgery or fraud against an elder adult and false imprisonment of an elder adult, as well as misdemeanor court count of elder abuse. So misdemeanor, I don't know if that's smacking or if that's yelling or screaming or, you know, just imprisoning the elder, not allowing them to go outside, could be also elder abuse, you know, where you're keeping them from friends or family or other people.
Well, that guy's a real a-hole then. He's a class a-hole. F that guy.
Yeah, if you go back to like 2 years ago when a lot of this stuff was popping up, the guy was under investigation for, you know, suddenly the daughter is coming out and saying this guy had bought a condo and Stan was like, no, or the manager was like, no, Stan gave this to me as a gift and driving around new cars and just basically having Stan forge check or not forge checks, but sign checks for these amounts that Stan probably didn't know what he was signing for.
Right.
And so this got some investigation going on. So now this guy has been officially charged with elder abuse. Now, just because someone's been charged doesn't mean that they're going to jail. It does have to go through the court process. And again, we are just doing some speculation and other tales of rumors and stuff that could be leading up to this. But this is the actual charge that Scottsdale and Phoenix, Arizona police have charged against his former business manager.
What bums me out is that his final months may have been marked by this stuff, you know, like, I don't know. Stanley was a you know, a bit of a treasure to this industry, and I think he should have been treated as such across the board. And to know that somebody wasn't, perhaps, is I don't know, just burns my cheese. I don't like it.
It really does, especially when this goes into a greater concern of, well, yes, this is in the spotlight because it is Stan Lee, but what about all of these other comic creators and other people who are, you know, victims of hit and run? Who, you know, no publisher is taking care of them after that because they're all contractors instead of employees of Marvel. What about these creators who get no residuals or have been burned out of getting their creator credits in the Marvel movies or DC movies or wherever it may be? Right. There's, you know, if you look at some of the lives of some of these older creators and even ones that have passed away, you know, back in the 50s and 60s. Some of the things that were going on with some of them are very sad and very scary. And to allow those things to happen to any elder, whether it's Stan Lee or anyone else, is really kind of sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like any of that. Well, we'll see how it pans out. We don't know how long this case will take, but I'm sure that we'll end up hearing about it and probably bringing it up on the show again. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the big question I've got. I've had this for a while. When I was building my, I was doing these decks of playing cards recently, this Kickstarter.
Right.
And we had a decision to make at one point during the production. Do we do them here in the States or do I have these done overseas? As it stands right now, a lot of playing cards and tabletop type stuff in general, it's all made in China now. It's all being made over in China.
Because these factories have the ability to flip their die cutting process and they've been working with people for years. So, yeah, a lot of people that I see doing Kickstarters and game publishers and comic book publishers have taken a lot of their stuff overseas, and they have for decades now.
Yeah.
Just because the process in China is very smooth. And you've been to China. You've toured factories. You know the streamlined process that they have. You've got one factory doing left shoes. You've got one factory doing right shoes.
Yeah, this is true. But also they're just cheap. Like, it's been less expensive. If it was price advantageous to do it here in the States, we would, but there's a huge cost savings to be had despite freight and everything else to have stuff done in China. Well, turns out that may not be true anymore. And we actually decided to go with a US based, production on ours because, well, two reasons. One, it's Bicycle, who makes great cards anyway. And then we wanted to use somebody who was, you know, was going to make really high quality cards for us, but also, there was this looming threat of what tariffs might do to this particular thing. Like, it was called out directly. If you look at some of the tariffs, playing cards were called out directly in some of this language. And so it freaked me out. And I was like, we better do them here. I don't know what this is going to mean. Well, now comic publishers are freaking out. You want to tell me what's going on with this?
So originally, and again, this is the political part of the show. Yes. But
welcome to politics, politics with Scott and Steven. Here we go.
So one of the things Trump did initially was he tried to raise tariffs on specific goods coming out of China to increase manufacturing here in the United States. Now, the new proposed increase in tariffs covers everything that's manufactured in China and sold in the U.S., which includes comic books, which, again, for a long time have had their stuff printed in China and then shipped over. The reason why we know this is, number one, we have someone who is a Major Spoilers and Frog Pants fan who actually deals with this shipping stuff and deals with these tariffs and imports, exports type stuff. He's actually contacted me a couple of weeks ago saying, hey, this is going to impact the comics industry. Let me do some research and maybe write an article for Major Spoilers on this. But now we have Flesk Publications went to Facebook last week and they said, we have been notified by our shipper today that by the end of June, there will be an implementation of a 25% duty tax that will affect books manufactured and imported from China, including Hong Kong, where we have our printing done. And he runs down a lot of the stuff that's going on with their small publishing. But if you're a Dynamite or you're a Marvel or you're a whoever publisher that has anything done in China, that 25% increase is going to cut into your bottom line. And right now with, and I don't know what the profit margins are on specific comics, but if you're looking at a 25% increase on a tax for having your comics published overseas, that's going to increase or potentially impact the prices that we pay at the comic book store, and probably not digitally, but at the comic book store and the grocery store and wherever else we buy our floppy and single issues of comics because of this. And that is kind of scary when we're already looking at prices of comics ranging anywhere from $2.99 to $4.99 an issue. And by the way, that Marvel Comics 1000, it's going to be a $10 comic.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This is kind of scary that this is happening, because for some smaller publishers, if they are forced to try to print in the U.S., that could also increase their prices to the point where those profit margins are even thinner. And when we've seen a couple of comic book publishers in the last month, Oni Press and Lion Forge Comics, merge, probably for business reasons, these could cause a lot of the smaller publishers to go out of business. And kind of keep in mind, these are just comic books printed in China. President Trump has not talked about tariffs from Canada, but at one point, a lot of the printing of comic books was also done in Canada. Mm-hmm. So what would happen if that shift then moves to Canada? Are we going to start seeing more tariffs coming from the northern side of our border?
Yeah, it's going to get weird before it gets better. Unfortunately, I don't know.
Don't go too political.
I'm not going to get political. I'm not going to get political, but a lot of people are under the impression that when tariffs are levied against another nation, to try to equal out trade deficits and things like that. They think that it's them paying the tariffs.
No, it's us.
We pay it. Like literally, China's not paying these tariffs. Now, how it hurts China, obviously, is because we will, you know, the knock-on effect is we will buy less of your overseas goods because the tariffs are so high, and then therefore your business, you lose business because we're buying less of the thing you're making.
Mm-hmm.
But people really get confused. Like, this is some sort of tax on China. It's not. It's a tax on us. And that's
it's a tax on American companies, to kind of force them to do their manufacturing, whatever, you know, creation of product that they're making here in the U.S. And manufacturers are just going to pass that cost on to us.
Yeah, of course they are. But not only that, even if they never decide to do it, even if they're like, you know what, this kind of stuff we'll just keep making in China. The prices will go higher because of the tariffs, but that's okay. Well, either way, we're having to pay more. Like, it's bad for this business that is already struggling to figure out ways to keep comic book stores alive, to keep the print version of comics a part of this medium and not just go full digital all the time. Like, if anything, as much as I am pro-digital, by the way, I love it. Like, I absolutely freaking love it. I love that I can get my comics that way, and it's my preferred way now. Give me a nice trade paperback sometimes, but for the most part, I am perfectly happy to get almost every comic I consume in digital format, and I'm kind of that way with everything I do. So I'm not really the problem here, but even I don't want to see more artificial walls in place that slow the print comic world down, you know, because that's all this will do. It'll slow it all down. It'll push it all to the back. It'll make it harder to justify, making good quality comics. And then they have to start making cuts in other ways, like quality of paper or, you know, less ink, or going with factories with, you know, they're going to be a lot less, but the quality is a little dubious and the staples are falling out and, you know, whatever the things are. And that really, it's worrying to me. And it's not like
there's an issue.
Yeah. And it's
then
not
digital comics are going to go up the same amount.
Right. There's that too. Right. Like everything has a knock on effect. It's a domino deal with this, with this. And it's bad. Now, somebody out there is hearing this. And look, I am no economist of any sort. I do not have any skills in that area, nor do I have any qualifications in the areas of economics and how things like this affect anything. But, if the idea is to raise tariffs so high that we just stop doing business in China for lots of products, including the things you and I are talking about, well then, I guess congratulations, but then I don't know where we go from there, because making comics here in the States is possible, certainly, but your prices are going to be ridiculous. So,
well, let me ask you, where is your paper going to come from? Are you going to force the paper to be made here in the U.S.? Are you going to have to, you know, look for more trees to chop down? Are we going to open up our national parks so we can chop down more trees? Are we going to allow hemp paper to become something that can be used again? What about our inks? None of our inks are manufactured here in the United States. That's all coming from overseas.
Yeah.
So now we have to import the ink. So no matter what, even if we just say, hey, we're going to print all our comics here, paper, ink, even regular distribution is all going to be impacted by the fact that we can't have this done somewhere else.
It's almost like you're saying that these things are much more complicated than just having a sweeping change that somehow makes us seem cool. Interesting.
I'm sure that there are some very stable geniuses in the economic sector that will write into us and let us know.
You may be right. I don't know. But it really is like just, it's really very frustrating because I worry for it. If this was a pure digital enterprise, fine. You know, we're already moving that way anyway, but it's not. And it's
not for another 10 years at least.
No, and there's a huge bunch of stuff at stake, including, you know, brick and mortar stores that need to pay their rent, that are trying to get foot traffic, that need to, you know, bring in current shipments of comics. Like, if we care about that stuff, we should care about this. And I don't know. I worry about it. I've got another card game I'm working on that I'm super excited about and can't wait to get it in production and all this other stuff. But now, once again, I'm faced with this question. It's like, where am I doing it? And where would it be, you know, where's going to make the most sense? And, you know, I don't know. It has a chilling effect. It makes me not want to do it as much as I did before. And I feel like that's bad. Anyway, so that's that. That's the thing that's going on. Let's dive into a little more discussion here. specifically stuff we've been reading. Now, I had these plans this month, all right? I had plans. I said to myself last week, or last month, I said, after this episode, I'm going to read like three or four of these comics that I've been just sitting on so I can talk to Steven about them. Right. And I was convinced this is going to happen. I ended up just watching, or I just ended up reading Watchmen again for some reason. I'm almost done with it again, but I'm reading Watchmen for the like 9,000th time. I do this with a lot of things. It's like, hey, there's a new video game out. I'm going to go play an old one. Or there's this TV show that everyone's raving about. I'm going to watch reruns of Futurama. Like, I don't know if this is just a thing I start doing the older I get or whatever, but it's sometimes what it does is just puts me in the mood for something else. And I got in the mood for Watchmen probably because I'm anticipating this HBO show so much and I want to see what that is. So it got me in the mood. So that's what I did. I read it and it's still great. And the world probably already knows this and they don't need me to tell them, but Watchmen still a fantastic comic and it should be read by everyone.
It is. But I do want you and everyone else to be aware that this Watchmen HBO series is not going to be an adaptation of the comic book.
No, in fact, isn't it? It's a sequel of sorts.
It's like a prequel sequel something.
Yeah, I think it's future because something I read was like it's in the 90s and it's like you see all those Rorschach faces.
Mm-mm. Like Rorschach. Yeah, oh yeah. So it's definitely after the events of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Rorschach's gone. So what this seems like to me is like kind of a cultish rebirth of the Watchmen in some way. Like we don't know much about that series, but I'm personally stoked that it's not just them trying to tell the Watchmen story. I want them to go new places, take it to new heights, like really just let loose creatively. These are the showrunners of The Leftovers, which I absolutely loved that series. But he's also controversial. Damon Lindelof is thought to be the reason that Lost had a terrible ending.
Right.
Although I don't think it was that terrible, but a lot of people do. And so, you know, we don't know yet. But I guess all of the hype I'm feeling for that, and the fact that HBO invests in stuff like that is no small thing. They usually, you know, they're usually not willing to go genre unless they think they have a hit on their hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, and comic books are a hot property, so I don't think that they're going to be missing out anything there. Mm-hmm. The problem is people revere Watchmen so much that anything that is not the original Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons Watchmen is looked at as sacrilegious. DC tried to do a pre-Watchmen series.
Yep.
Everyone hated that series. Well, I shouldn't say everyone. A vast majority hated that series. There's this thing called the Doomsday Clock, which was supposed to run 12 issues and last an entire year. It's now 12 issues and has gone on for almost 2 years now because of delays. I haven't found a whole lot of people who are big fans of the Doomsday Clock, which is kind of a sequel to The Watchmen. I mean, there's some groundbreaking things that are going on in that, but people are, the minute that you say, hey, we're doing something with Watchmen, people kind of turn their noses up at it, especially I think after the movie came out a couple of years ago. People have just been like, why are you still trying to beat this thing to death?
Yeah.
The original was so good. And of course, everyone knows the animosity that Alan Moore has towards DC and how he got screwed over on this deal, that I think that's also making some people somewhat bitter.
Well, he hates adaptations of his work sight unseen. Like he's just, he's in his cave with his beard going, nope, not into it. Don't care. Don't want it. I hate it already. I haven't even seen it. And so I expect no love from him in this regard. But as someone who is a fan of a lot of what they did in the 2009 movie, I actually liked that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But also as an ardent fan of the comic, I don't understand why people are so precious about it. Like you've got your comic, you have your singular work. Like it's amazing. And we all should be glad we got it. And we should read it all the time, but it's okay to experiment in that place. It's a great place to go. It's like saying, hey, there's that one, they did one run of Batman in the 50s, and that should be it. Nobody should ever make Batman comics again. Like, I don't agree. There's some rich stuff in there. So go for it. And if you fail, it's fine. Someone else will try it later. And like, it's not that big a deal.
I think because I agree with you now, because there is so much comic book related properties out there, right? I mean, so many TV shows, so many movies, so many related products that are coming out, podcasts based on comic books, with the Wolverine series, that I think people are a little bit more okay now with this coming out and saying, hey, if this flops, or like the Robert Pattinson thing, hey, if he's not the best Batman, that's okay, because there'll be another Batman series with another person playing Batman. in the future, and we're okay with that.
Yeah.
If this had been, this is the first time, or, you know, if we take this, we roll this back to like 2005, let's say before Iron Man and everything really launched and really became a thing. If HBO said, hey, we're doing this Watchmen thing that's set after the events of the comic book, people would be a lot more nervous about this than they are today, because this would be like, oh my gosh, here's our one chance to see comic books adapted into something big. And oh, if it fails, that's going to be it. There will be no more comic book adaptations of anything going forward.
Yeah, totally agree. Like, look at Umbrella Academy, or, you know, a dozen other projects on Netflix, Hulu, or whatever. You know, to varying degrees of success, they've all sort of just been accepted as, hey, that's a cool new comic property coming from whatever. The WB or the CW has become, you know, a haven to all this DC stuff. And, you know, Marvel's in about 12 different places. Like, it's if there was a better time to do this, to do the sacred thing of messing with the Watchmen and somehow having Don Johnson in it, then now's the time. Like, when else are you going to experiment in this way?
Yeah.
So I'm not that worried about it. In fact, I'm the other side of it. I'm super excited about it because, generally speaking, HBO doesn't let me down. And their shows, especially their genre stuff, sticks with me. I love it. Like, even, you know, obviously mixed reviews about the way Game of Thrones ended. I don't care. I love that whole series. Top to bottom. I'd watch it again. I'm about ready to. So, you
awesome.
Know, bring it on. Let's have a little Watchmen. Let's see what you do with it. Let's see how a cable channel without too many restraints can take some of that subject matter.
The one thing I would echo on you saying that you're reading Watchmen again in anticipation of this series, I would definitely encourage anyone, if they have never read Watchmen, to go and get the trade paperback of this just really great deconstruction of the hero.
Yeah.
This series kind of ushered in or came about at the same time as the superhero universe got dark and gritty. This is one of those that led to that. Dark Knight Returns, also an Alan Moore is responsible for that.
I thought Dark Knight Returns was...
I'm sorry. I'm wrong on that. Sorry.
Other guy.
Frank Miller.
Another controversial subject.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, sit down and read Watchmen, and this is not something that you can just read all the way through one time. This is something that needs repeat readings and really to understand how art is being used to tell this story, because there's so much from the visual side that impacts and kind of foreshadows where the story is going, that you're going to have to read this multiple times and go and do your research on how this book came about and what the metaphors and what the underlying messages are in this book. I mean, this is really a college course. If you start reading Watchmen, to go in and analyze it and see where everything is coming from, but definitely Watchmen, a fantastic book to go and read.
Here's a controversial statement. Bran Stark is Dr. Manhattan. Just putting that out there. Think about it, everybody. Think about it. Bran Stark is Dr. Manhattan.
Okay.
That's all I'll say about that. Let's talk about what you've read. Reading anything good?
So I have been very excited about Brian Michael Bendis when he was announced to come over to DC Comics. And I knew right away, the minute that he said he was coming over to DC, I said, I bet he's going to take on Superman. In fact, I tweeted that out. And sure enough, it came true. And I have been super, super thrilled with his Action Comics run that he has been doing, because he has been bringing in these bit characters from all over the place, the Question, the Manhunter, the DEO, and Dr. Bones, characters we haven't seen since the 90s and sometimes before, are all kind of making these appearances as Superman is trying to figure out, what is this organization called Leviathan, and why are they trying to destroy all government organizations, all government crime organizations in the world? And it has been such a good mystery and such a good run. It's got some great Jimmy Olsen bits in it. It's got some great Lois Lane bits in it. And this week, the week that we're recording this podcast, they're coming out, DC is coming out with a Superman Leviathan Rises #1, which is kind of like, let's take all these things that have been happening in the last year in Action Comics, and let's not just summarize it, but let's put this story further, because starting in June 19th, I want to say, they are doing this Leviathan event at DC Comics, which is supposed to impact the entire, you know, DC line of superhero comics, including the Justice League, because I don't want to spoil too much. But in this Leviathan Rises issue, which I've already read, there's a point where Leviathan is like, look, we don't want to destroy heroes. We want them to see the light, and we want them to come to our side. and join our cause instead of this cause that the governments of the world want to set up. So I'm very excited for what's going on with that. And I think Brian Michael Bendis, I know some people don't like him because he gets too wordy, but this has been a fantastic run of Action Comics.
It's interesting, the wordiness claim that people have against him. Comics are notoriously visual, obviously. That's the whole point of them versus books, true, right?
Well, I think the biggest complaint people have, and you can go back and see this in his Ultimate Spider-Man run, where Stan Lee and Steve Ditko or whoever else was doing Spider-Man tales at the time, they could tell a massive arc in one or two issues in which Brian Michael Bendis, as he's trying to retell these stories in Ultimate Spider-Man, mm-hmm. took 24 issues to tell.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people were worried that was going to happen with Action Comics as well.
Yeah, I could see that. I was just going to make the comment, too, that reading Watchmen again, you know who else is pretty wordy? Alan Moore's pretty wordy, I'd say.
Yeah, it is a deep, deep comic. Now, I did have a tweet that someone sent me today. There's a movie that's out in theaters now. I haven't seen it. I'm probably going to wait for it to arrive on digital, but it's called Brightburn. Mm. Are you familiar with this movie, Brightburn?
So Brightburn's supposed to, my understanding is, there's a production credit for James Gunn.
And
his brother's Brian and Mark, or is it cousins or something like that, who are the ones that made the movie, so he's got production credit on it. Mm-hmm. I knew that about it, and I knew the idea is, what if Superman was the worst villain ever?
Yeah, what if he's evil? What if he wasn't raised by the right parents, or what if he took something a little bit different and he started using his powers to just do bad things? So it's kind of like supposed to be like a horror, dark thriller, yeah, of what if Superman kind of thing.
Right.
And so someone tweeted me the other day and was like, hey, I just saw Brightburn this weekend. I'm very excited about it. It's really good. What are some other books that I might want to check out if I want to see, this Superman as evil kind of thing? And one of the best ones that I would recommend for people to go check out is Mark Waid's Irredeemable run.
So good.
Now, this came out in, I want to say, 2009,
yeah,
and it ran until 2012, but it is essentially tells the story of the Plutonian, who just, you don't get any backstory on the Plutonian. You open up issue one, he's smashing into someone's house, he's burning them to death with his heat vision, he is killing people left and right, he's just killing people across the globe and killing heroes and villains as well. He doesn't want anyone to stand in his way. Mm-hmm. And so this is the story of, why did this hero, a Superman archetype, why did he suddenly go evil, and why is he killing everyone on the planet? And I think if people are interested in Brightburn and they've seen that, Mark Waid's Irredeemable is fascinating.
Probably better. It's probably better.
It might be better, but it is just fascinating in where Waid took this story. And I know that we were just talking about how people are, maybe not thrilled with the grimdark superhero and heroes turning bad and how could Superman kill somebody and that kind of stuff. But this is a really good series looking at it from this horrific, what would happen if someone who had every single power, was all powerful, who just decided one day to flip that switch and become bad. And I think this makes you, in a sense, appreciate who Superman is. Mm-hmm. There's a great bit in the Superman animated series where he's fighting Darkseid and he comes up with this cardboard story where Superman's like, all my life I have to treat this entire world as if it's made with cardboard, and I have to treat it with kid gloves. But now that I meet you, Darkseid, I can finally let loose. And you see Superman kind of get a little angry. Or if you've seen the Justice League International, where there's an alternate universe version where the Flash is killed and the Justice Lords come to power, and that's Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman at the lead. You can see where Superman goes bad, but you're so glad that he is such a good guy. When you read Irredeemable, you're just like, oh, thank God Superman has never done this, and the Plutonian is this evil. It's a good story to read, but again, there are some very graphic, violent bits. I mean, like I said, he burns a family to death in the very first page of Irredeemable. He's ripping people in half. It's a pretty book because it's art by Peter Krause, but at the same time, it is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that Boom Studios would allow this to happen. But this is kind of how they made their mark on the world with Mark Waid. Yeah. So go check this out. It's Irredeemable. It's a closed series. It ran from 2009 till 2012. It wasn't canceled. Waid ended the series with issue 37. And that might be something people might want to check out if they liked Brightburn.
It's fan freaking tastic. I loved Irredeemable every second of it. And people should read that. Aside from your,
go see Brightburn.
I haven't yet. Not for any reason. I noticed reviews are mixed, but it's still the sort of thing I feel like I need to see. I just haven't had a moment to get out there.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. Yeah. It's one that I think I'm just going to wait for it to come out on video.
Yeah, I'll probably do that as well. But it's an interesting concept to me. And I would, yes. I probably would have preferred somebody say, hey, they're making an Irredeemable series on some cool streaming mm-hmm. service. That's something I would love to see.
Yeah, definitely.
But
definitely,
it needs more than 2 hours. It needs to be a show.
Yes. It needs 37 episodes.
Yeah. Well, that's a great recommendation. I would also recommend people do that. So do check that out. And that's going to do it for today's show. The business end of things goes like this. Comic Dorks is a website. It's over at comicdorks.com. You can find old episodes of the show. You can find our current episodes. And you can send us messages there, all sorts of stuff. You can email us directly, comicdorks@gmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter at comicdorks. Major spoilers. I'm at Scott Johnson. And I think it's going to do it. More shows like this at frogpants.com. Don't forget, Steven Schleicher's over at majorspoilers.com, and you want to be going there for your daily fix. Think of what we do here, and then think of what you'd like on the daily, and that's pretty much what you're going to get over at Major Spoilers. So do check that out. He also shows up on our morning show here at Frog Pants every Monday to talk about similar stuff, so you can get a piece of the Schleich whenever you want it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, baby. We hope everybody has a fantastic Memorial Day today and a great month. We'll be back at the end of June with another episode of this here show. That's Comic Dorks. Follow us on Twitter at Comic Dorks. That's going to do it for us. For me and Steven, we'll see you next time. Bye. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com. A piece of the Schleich whenever you want it.